Our speaker this morning is Rima Green. Rima is an unusual woman. You will get to know her in just a few minutes. She has a long history of caring about the beloved community that we all belong to. For 8 years, she has directed the Let Us Grow program, an innovative program of gardening and gardening education that is offered in correctional facilities across the state of Oregon. Let Us Grow provides inmates with access to fresh food and gardening experiences, as well as job credentialing classes. Through the medium of gardening and gardening education, they seek to improve inmates' life skills so that when they emerge from prisons, they are better equipped to address the issues of reintegration into society. Rima herself has survived not only the foster care system, but incarceration as well. She's going to tell you about that and also provide us with some information that makes me remember that I shouldn't have put the screen up. Rima, will you come forward and begin with a reading, please, I believe, from Howard Zinn.
I do have to say, you are much more fun than a lot of comments. That was a great piece of music. Thank you.
Not naming names.
Okay. Howard Zinn, who's one of my favorite writers. This is from You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train, A Personal History of Our Times. I am convinced that imprisonment is a way of pretending, is it loud enough?
Yeah.
Of pretending to solve the problems of crime. It does nothing for the victims of crime, but perpetuates the idea of retribution, thus maintaining an endless cycle of violence in our culture. It is a cruel and useless substitute for eliminating those conditions of poverty, unemployment, homelessness, desperation, racism, greed, which are at the core of most punished crimes. The crimes of the rich and powerful go mostly unpunished. Wow. Big surprise, right? Anybody talk to the president lately? It must surely be a tribute to the resilience of the human spirit that even a small number of those men and women in the hell of the prison system survives it and holds on to their humanity. Sure. And I, of course, left the clicker down there.
I was going to wear a headset, but my hair is in the way. Sorry, bear with me while I try to realign
myself here.
This work?
Yeah, that works fine. Okay. I work for a nonprofit called Growing Gardens. We run three programs. We run a youth program where we go into elementary schools and we work with elementary schools in the Portland area. We work with home gardeners in low-income home gardeners in also the metropolitan area. And we help them start gardens and we provide support and education for them for the three-year mentoring period. The other program is Let Us Grow, which is my program. We are in 16 institutions across the state. Before we get into what I do, let's talk about who's in prison, okay?
I don't know. Is it up?
Yeah. Okay. There's 2.3 million people who are imprisoned in the United States. We have the highest rate of incarceration in the first world. I think the sad thing is that we're not offering people in prison much hope. We put them into cold storage, essentially. We leave them there without education or much hope at all. for lack of anything better to say. If you look at it, the majority of them are in the state correctional system rather than the federal system. And while the federal system, before the new president, was committed to reducing the number of people in the system, Jeff wants to go lock them all up again. So it's only going to get worse, folks. We will continue to lock people up and not provide them much of what they need. Just so you know, the United States is one of the top incarcerators of women. And there are 219,000 women incarcerated in the United States. And we're incarcerating more of them now. So let's think about this. This is Mother's Day. It's coming up, what, next week? Okay. At Coffee Creek, which is the only women's facility in Oregon, there are about 3,000 women between medium, minimum, and maximum. 75% of them are mothers. 65% of them have children under the age of 18. They will not be spending Mother's Day with their children. Okay. And nonviolent drug offenders are a defining characteristic of the federal prison system. It's not so much in the state system, but if you look at the federal lockup, you'll see that they a tremendous number of the people in the federal system are indeed nonviolent drug offenders. This is not an answer. We also have 7,200 youth locked up. These are youth in residential treatment. These are youth who are in residential treatment. They have been removed from families. And we have 34,000 youth locked up. 720 of them are for non-criminal offenses. That's anywhere from being out of control to not going to school or a parent, and they stay locked up. I'm an emergency foster mother. I take in kids who end up in detention because they have no place to go. So we lock them up too. What about Oregon? We have 14,773 people locked up in this state. 1,304 are women. It's actually higher than this. The balance are men. The average age is 39 years old. The median length of stay is 64 months. The cost per day is $108. So the crime types, personal property, statute, other. But let's do the math here. So it costs us to lock somebody up in Oregon for 64 months, $207,000. And I assure you, in the state system, that is a pretty tough place to be. You know, I reach a point where I think, man, we should just give them the money. Here, go to school. Learn to work. Do something. Locking people up solves nothing. Don't get me wrong. There are people in the system who I'm really glad they're there. I've seen them. They scare me. But the majority of the people who we work with, who come into our program, they are people who have made very poor decisions with their lives. And you can go back to them and you can ask them why. They'll talk about foster care, disrupted home lives, drug and alcohol, the foster care system, the juvenile system. All of these things are contributors. So if we started working on these people's core problems, never mind racism and all the other things that happens to people who do not have any means. Okay, just so you can see, this is where we are all over the state. Mainly in rural locations, you have prisons. These are state prisons. The federal prison is at Sheridan. And these are all over. The two right in the middle were planned, and they're off the books now. They're not going to be built, thank God. And these are the Oregon residential treatment and supervised treatment sites in Oregon. We tie up a huge amount of people a huge amount of money keeping people in prison. Okay, and what happens to family members? When somebody is incarcerated, 83% of family members are responsible. Being in prison is really expensive. Making a phone call costs $5, and that's been lowered. Lawyers cost money. So the families of people who are incarcerated are also affected by the incarceration. So 83% of the family members who this burden falls on are women, and 70% of the families have children under the age of 18. Okay, and once you get out, there are 44,000 local, state, and federal restrictions on people with felony convictions. So even if you've done your time, once you get out, there are still restrictions on what you do, voting, student loans, everything. You carry this with you. When I talk to inmates, I keep saying, do not let your crime define you. But it's hard when there are 44,000 regulations that say, oh, you're a felon, you can't vote in this state, you're not eligible for student loans. It's really tough. Okay, so what do we do? Because I have history with almost all of the systems that I'm talking about, sometimes I felt really overwhelmed in terms of what I can do. So what I did was I started a gardening program. Another lady and I started a gardening program. And we decided that gardening is good for people. Why would it not be good for people who are in the correctional system? So this started out of a project at Coffee Creek. It's now in 13 adult state prisons, the federal prison at Sheridan, 2 juvenile sites, and we work with Yamhill County Youth Services. Basically, we provide classes and volunteers who go into these sites and work with the inmates and provide mentoring and garden skills for them. So our classes are job credentialing classes. OSU has given us their sustainable gardening syllabus, which leads to a certificate of home horticulture. We also offer a greenhouse class, which is a class which will give you a certificate in greenhouse management. So these are job credentialing classes for people who will, hopefully, horticulture tends to be a little more forgiving about felonies if people are trained. So as I tell people, this is the difference between you and another person with a shovel. You have education. So those are our classes. Those are the books. We work with OSU, Chemeketa Community College, and the Oregon Food Bank. So all these classes are offered at least once a year at almost all the correctional sites in Oregon. I think what people do not know about the state of Oregon is in their state correctional system, they grow a lot of their own food. Last year, they grew 253,000 pounds of food that went into the kitchens to feed the inmates. They get $2.40 per day per inmate to feed them, 3 meals a day. You figure out what that looks like. It's pretty grim stuff. Being able to access fresh food and to serve it is a big benefit, and we have great stories. I had a guard. People like us. Most of the people agree, gee, gardening's good for people, right? And we enjoy it. But sometimes the COs, the officers are kind of like, this is kind of weird. I get two things, and then I will go back to my planned presentation, which was one of the COs came to me and said, those guys really work hard in the garden. I watched them. I mean, they work really hard. They're out there at Columbia River 3 hours a week, and they're in class 2 hours a week. And he goes, they work really hard. They come in here, they don't do anything. They just don't do anything. And I'm going, well, let me see. Growing your own food, planting it, watching it grow, harvesting it, eating it, and waxing a floor. Being out in the garden where it's quiet and it's beautiful. cleaning toilets. Meaningful work makes a big difference. People want to do meaningful work. People want to help out. The other one was, one officer wandered over to me and said, "You're turning them into gourmet snobs." Okie dokie. Tell me about that. He said, "They're sitting in the chow hall talking about different kinds of tomatoes. Have you tried the indigo rose?" "No, no, the sweet ices is much better." You know, I'm kind of like, because they're sitting there talking about tomatoes, and I'm going, considering some of the conversations I've heard about the finer points of making crack, you know, or, you know, how to make a really good shift, I think that's a healthier conversation. We are highly supported, but these guys, you know, and I feel sorry for them. They have an absolutely horrible job. COs have terrible jobs. They're not prepared for what they're doing. They get 6 months of training, largely combat training. And they are with people who really don't want to be there and don't like them. So I have sympathy for them, but I really wish there was more training available for them. So those are our classes. Why we do it? I think Suma covered it. That's why we do it. We do it because job skills, when we impact recidivism a great deal, the national average for recidivism is over 76% right now. In Oregon, it's 30%, which is one of the lowest in the United States. People who have been through our program are at 9. So right now, we've got them convinced that gardening is good for people. We are not the only people doing this. There are 9 organizations across the United States that are doing this. So, gardening's good for you. Don't tell Donald Trump. Basically, these are pictures. So you can see some of these gardens. They are not unsubstantial. That's Two Rivers and Powder Rivers, which is on the eastern side of the state. This is McLaren, where we give classes. They use all the food that comes out of there in their culinary program. I do this because I feel people are being wasted. There are people who are learning nothing except bad things. There are people who live in conditions that I think, especially juveniles, is not legal by the Geneva Convention. If you are a juvenile and you are in detention, you are in a full lockup. You are in a room that locks with the grate and the door, and the lights never go off. You get outside twice a day for an hour, a chance. And if you aren't crazy when you get in there, you will be by the time you get out of the juvenile system. What can we do? People ask me what you can do. Other than donate to my organization, which would be really nice, there's a number of things you can do. Ron Underhill is the district attorney for Multnomah County. 90% of all criminal, and these are downstairs if anybody's interested, 90% of all criminal cases are settled with a plea bargain. People who take plea bargains do it for a number of reasons, not necessarily because they're guilty. They do it because they can't afford adequate counsel. They have a previous arrest, and they're afraid of what will happen. And they don't trust the system, frankly, enough to go to court and defend themselves. This is an elected office in Multnomah County. And I'm really having trouble with the concept that 90% of the people who come before the court are guilty. So I think we should, and I have, he does not like me, asked Mr. Underhill what his philosophy is because he keeps talking about his clearance rate, his ability to clear and his ADAs to clear cases, and that Multnomah County is really good at this. I think we all need to go ask him what his philosophy is and what they do to ensure people who are innocent do not go to jail. There's his email address and his phone number. We elect them. It's our votes matter. He's one person who people should talk to. And when he comes up, this is like one of the great non sequiturs. Nobody knows. It kind of comes through in one of the county things. You got to look at the book. The other thing is measure 11. Can I switch? Okay. Measure 11 has been on the books since 1994. It applies mandatory minimum prison sentences for crimes against people, violent crimes. And there is no possibility of sentence reduction or good behavior. Measure 11 also mandates that children above the age of 15 will be tried and sentenced as an adult. This year, after a lot of agitation, Multnomah County has changed their rules to say that no, it's not mandatory that a child be charged as an adult. It's up to the judge. But frankly, I've worked with Measure 11. I've taught classes for Measure 11 boys. They're children. There is no way you can tell me, and I've raised teenage boys, that a 16-year-old teenage boy is an adult. They're not. They're children. They should be treated as children. Find out what happened, why it happened, and what we can do. There are five precursors for adult incarceration, and they are interaction with the juvenile system, poor school performance, disrupted family life, drugs and alcohol, and separation from families. When a kid comes into the system, I have no idea why bells don't go off if you've got a kid with five indicators. But they don't. They put them in detention. And they let them sit there until they decide what to do with them. So this is a state law, Measure 11, and it needs to be repealed in effect for juveniles. I think it should be repealed for everybody, because a lot of people are really sorry. I have never met anybody, and I've spent the last 8 years working with inmates, has ever told me they were innocent, which is the first thing the DOC tells you when you get trained as a DOC volunteer. People will tell you they're innocent. Nobody's ever told me they were innocent. They have said, yes, I did this, but I didn't deserve this much time, but nobody's ever told me they're innocent. So I think it should be repealed for everybody, but it needs to be repealed for juveniles. It just does. They're children. And I really don't care what they did. They're still children. These are a list of resources, because the other thing you need to do is educate yourself. And I have these listed out. Both of these people, all the graphs come from the prison, from Peter Wagner. And there's lots of information. This is virtually painless. You go on the website, you subscribe to it, you look at it. Prison Fellowship is the same thing. They talk about the Innocence Projects and all that. And the other thing is, this is a podcast, Ear Hustle, from San Quentin. It is put together by the inmates. It's fascinating to listen to. That's really all I have, and I'd love to answer questions if people have them. All I can say is one of the things we are doing, which is really interesting, is we are in talks now with South Fork, which is up near Tillamook, and Food Roots there, to see if there's something the institution can do, like grow starts for the school system, trying to mediate these discussions so the guys up there are not the felons in the woods anymore. They are contributing to the community, even if they're outside of it. We're also doing this in Portland. And I am going to Brazil to work with the Brazilian government next month to set up a juvenile gardening program in one of their facilities. So, I mean, if the Brazilian could... Well, the hoot is the State Department is paying for this. So if anybody talks to Donald Trump, don't tell him. He doesn't know he's funding all this. So if people have questions?
Let's take, we've got about 5 or 6 minutes that we can take questions, and I'm going to try and get to as many of you as possible.
I'll try to be brief, but I feel pretty passionate about this. A little over 20 years ago, I graduated from the Administration of Justice program at Portland State. The majority of my classmates went into law enforcement, some of them were pre-law. I was somebody that really believed in changing prisons, because one of the biggest farces is that it's a correctional facility. There's nothing that gets corrected about this behavior. As part of one of my classes, I did a tour through Columbia River Correctional Facility and was one of two people that was picked for the first job sharing for people that were just coming out of college for my last year. I ended up going to work for Portland Police Bureau in an IT thing, but I ended up getting exposure to the kids at the juvenile detention center just right off the interstate.
Donnelly Long.
Yep, Donnelly Long. And the fear in these kids that came in, because I deal with the computers that were dealing with the booking, the fear in these kids' eyes, that has got to, alone has got to be so traumatizing. And they either become victims or bullies to survive, and it sets the pace for all of it. And then the third thing that's really disheartening about the system is the way the state allows these prisoners to be used for slave labor, undercutting some of the businesses and using them for non-public things. I don't know if that's changed. Again, this has been 20-plus years.
Prison Industries, Inc., which is still kind of a thing, but basically now South Fork, the guys fight fires for $2 a day, by the way, and they work for the Forestry Department. If it's a 45-degree angle, the tree planters will be from DOC. But I'm with you. Juveniles have no rights, by the way. There is no right of habeas corpus for a juvenile. If you are arrested, you go to detention, you stay there until they determine what's going to happen to you, and that can be up to 9 months. It's heartbreaking. They're kids, and they have no idea what's going to happen with their life. They're in probably the most trauma they've ever been in their lives, and you know what I'm talking about. And they don't know what's going to happen to them. Like I said, if you aren't crazy when you go in, you will be by the time you get out.
Hi, I would like to know the status of the counseling program and women coming out of Coffee Creek. 10 years ago, I was working with that population, trying to reintegrate them into this system, and that just wasn't enough.
It's still not enough.
It's still not enough.
It is largely done by nonprofits. Mercy
yes,
Corps does it.
I was working for a nonprofit.
Red Lodge Transition does it for Native women.
Okay.
But largely, there are not adequate services for people coming out. Not to have anything against religious services, a lot of these reentry services are provided by religious groups, but the state provides very little. Frankly, they don't have a lot of budget. 2 years ago, the rehabilitation budget was cut by 48%, and the money went to schools. We don't have any money. We lock people up. We don't train them. And then we just kind of say, go on out there, meet your probation officer who says, get a job. And for a lot of people, that is the work. There are a number of really good ones. Southeast Works does a lot. They deal almost entirely with people coming out of the correctional systems. But the state has very little except to refer people into programs.
We're going to have to close the conversation here. But Rima's going to come downstairs, and we're going to be able to continue talking down there. I wanted to mention when she and I met and we talked about her coming to speak here, the thing that impressed me the most was this idea that when Rima brings her people into the prison system, they're not the teachers and the prisoners. They are all gardeners. And so there is this returning of the humanity.
I'm sorry, I got nervous. You're right. One of our board members was one of my students at Columbia River, and he's now on the board of Growing Gardens. He was in our program. And he said that for him, the thing was that these volunteers came in, and they kept coming in. And they were like, we're gardeners. We want to teach you how to garden, you know. And they were really excited, and they were happy to share. And he said, it started out as the volunteers and the inmates. It ended up halfway through that, we were all gardeners. So for 3 hours a week, I was not an inmate. I was a gardener. And he goes, you have no idea what that means to somebody inside. I think we deal in hope as much as we deal in anything else, because people realize, for anybody who's had anything to do with the system, it's not easy to volunteer, it's not easy to get in, it's not easy to get all the passes. They know how hard it is. I tell them it's almost as hard for us to get in as for them to get out, because there's so many rules around volunteering in a correctional facility. But if you bring people They understand that I feel that you are worthy of my time and my energy, and that's a validating thing for somebody who is sitting there at a low point in their lives. And this carries out to people outside. You know, Oregon banned the box, at least the first time through on a job app. You don't have to say if you have a felony. But that second interview, you can get quizzed on that. So if we meet these people and they come into our midst, we need to welcome them back. They've done their time. You know, I did my time. I became a worthwhile member of the community. I spent 30 years at Tektronix as a program manager. But, you know, you have to welcome people back. It can't be this whole thing. They are not the other. They are us. They are our mothers, our fathers, our children, you know, our uncles and our cousins. They are not those people out there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.